September 90, or not 19, in the September 1620, the Mayflower set sail from Plymouth in England. It was carrying 102 passengers across the Atlantic Ocean. Their destination was Northern Virginia, near Jamestown Settlement, where there were established trade routes, supply lines, and at least the framework of English civilization. That was the plan anyway. That was the contract they'd signed with their financial backers. But the Atlantic Ocean had other ideas. Storm after storm battered the ships. The main beam cracked mid-voyage and had to be reinforced with a giant iron screw that they'd brought from Holland. Navigation errors compounded in those violent seas. By the time they'd finally spotted land, after 66 brutal days at sea, they were, well, nowhere near Virginia. They were in Cape Cod, what is today Massachusetts, hundreds of miles north of where they were supposed to be. They were isolated, unsupplied, staring down a brutal New England winter with no shelter or port system. They were not at all where they had hoped to be. The Pilgrims, they were furious. That wasn't the plan. This was a disaster. William Bradford, who would later become their governor, wrote that some passengers even wanted to mutiny to force the ship back down south to the right destination, the place they'd actually intended to go, paid even to go. But it was too late in the season, and the ship was too damaged. The supplies were too low, and they were stuck with what looked like a catastrophic failure. What they didn't know, what they couldn't know at this moment, was that the wrong destination was actually the perfect one for them. The detour felt like a failure, but it was actually precision. The inconvenience that looked random was actually God's providence. Had they reached their intended landing spot in Virginia, they would have stepped into a colony wrecked by hunger, disease, and violent unrest. Instead, their mistake placed them in a place where survival was possible. In New England, what lay before them was not a barren wilderness that they'd feared, but a set of conditions far, far more favourable than the place that they'd intended to go. The shores of Cape Cod were deep harbours of fresh water. There were fields already cleared by native hands, all consequences of recent epidemics that had emptied the village of civilization but left the land prepared for cultivation. The local people, weakened and surrounded by rival tribes, welcomed these newcomers, not as invaders, but potential allies. This precarious political moment, unknown to everyone on board, would open doors that might not have existed anywhere else. They aimed for convenience. God rooted them for survival. They wanted the established path. God gave them a harbour, fresh water, and what would become the cradle of religious freedom in the new world. This morning we are in Luke chapter 2, watching another family take a journey that they didn't plan, to a destination that felt inconvenient at a time that made no sense. But just like these pilgrims, we're going to see that when God is writing the story, there are no wrong turns. There are no accidents. There is only providence in the details. So let's read together Luke chapter 2, beginning verse 1. In those days a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration when Quirinius was governor of Syria. And all went to be registered, each to his own town. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. And while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. Here's the big idea this morning. God rules the rulers and threads every inconvenience to fulfill his promises. Exactly. Let me say that again. God rules even the rulers and threads inconvenience to fulfill his promises. Exactly. We're going to walk through three movements in this text. First, we'll see that God writes history, not Caesar. Second, we'll see the providence orders our steps to the right place, even if it's not the place we expected them to take us. And third, we'll see that God fulfills his promises with precision and humility. Let's begin by looking again at verse 1. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. Caesar Augustus was the adopted son of Julius Caesar, the first emperor of Rome. By the time of Luke's writing, Caesar Augustus had become a legend. He ruled in total for 41 years and controlled an empire that stretched from Spain to Syria. He built temples in his honor, had coins minted with his face. You'll even find inscriptions calling him savior and son of God. When Caesar issued a decree, the world listened. So when he said all the world should be registered, he meant it. This was a census, a tool of imperial power. You count the people so you can tax the people. It's not that difficult, really. And you tax people so you can control and fund your armies. Especially in those days, that was how you kept the peace and expanded your empire. You fund armies so you can control more people, and the system continues. The machinery of empire, it's raw, it's human political power, flexing its muscles. And the census is the representation of all of that power. From a human perspective, this is exactly what is going on here. Caesar wants control and wants to consolidate his power. He wants everyone counted, catalogued, and reminded who is in charge. This is a secular decree with a secular purpose, issued by a secular ruler. It's interesting, though. Luke doesn't start the Christmas story with Mary, or the angels, or the shepherds, or the manger. He starts with Caesar Augustus. He starts with the most powerful man in the world issuing an order that will move millions of people across the Roman Empire. It doesn't appear that he starts this story with God. And yet that is precisely what he's doing here. Because even as he mentions Caesar, he also points us towards a secret. Caesar thinks he's writing history here. But God is the one who's holding the pen. Because 700 years earlier, 7 centuries before Caesar Augustus was even born, a prophet named Micah stood up in a little town south of Jerusalem and spoke these words, words that we've been thinking about throughout this series. But you, O Bethlehem, who are too little among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to be ruler of Israel, whose coming forth is from days of old, from ancient days. That's Micah 5:2. Bethlehem, not Jerusalem, the capital. Not Rome, the centre of power. Bethlehem, this tiny, insignificant village. And yet God has already decreed this is where the ruler of Israel will be born. The one whose origins are from ancient days, the eternal king. This is the place you should expect to find him. And on a human level, there's a problem here. You see, he's chosen Mary, a woman who is not in Bethlehem. She lives roughly 80 miles north of Bethlehem. 80 miles may not seem that far with our cars. But in those days, it was a world away. Multiple day journey by foot through treacherous roads, the kind of journey no one would take by choice. They have no reason to go to Bethlehem. Mary's 9 months pregnant at this point. Travel is dangerous. The roads are rough, bandits are common. This is the last time you would ever consider taking a multi-day journey on foot or on a donkey. But Micah 5:2 doesn't say the Messiah will be born in Nazareth. He says Bethlehem. So how does God get a pregnant woman from Nazareth to Bethlehem at exactly the right time? He uses a pagan emperor who's never even heard of Micah and does not care about Jewish prophecy. He uses Caesar to issue a decree. Caesar, who thinks he's strengthening Rome, who thinks he's building his legacy, who thinks he's the author of this moment. But what he's actually doing, what God is actually doing through him, is moving a carpenter and his pregnant wife 80 miles south to the exact time where the Messiah must be born, right on schedule, right as promised. Caesar is writing history. His name will appear in the history books. And yet God is holding the pen. Do you see it? Caesar's decree looks political, and it is political. But it's also providential. It's both. The human author works for human reasons, but the divine author writes through this human author for divine reasons. Caesar wants taxes, yes. But God wants two people 80 miles south in Bethlehem. And here's what that means for us. The headlines we read, the policies our workplaces announce, the government decisions that feel random or unjust or disconnected from God, none of them are outside his sovereignty. None of them surprise him. He's not scrambling to adjust his plan because a politician did something unexpected. He's not caught off guard by the news cycles. God doesn't just react to history. He doesn't just permit Caesar's decree. He ordains it. He threads it into his grand story of redemption so that precisely at the right time, the 700-year prophecy comes true in a way that's completely unnatural and completely miraculous at the same time. So here's the application, and this is practical. Name something this week. A headline, a workplace policy, a decision someone in authority has made that feels random or frustrating or disconnected from God. Name it, write it down if you need to, and then pray over it. Pray specifically this week. Pray to see God's hidden thread instead of only the human author's intent. Don't just read the news and get angry. Don't just grumble about your boss or the government and assume God's absent. Ask him to give you eyes to see what's going on beneath the surface. Ask him to help you to trust that he is writing the story, even when Caesar thinks he is. Now look at verse 4 and 5. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house of and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was pregnant. Joseph packs up. He takes Mary with him, his betrothed, pregnant fiancée, and they make this treacherous journey. 80 miles on foot, maybe a donkey to help carry supplies. You travel through the hill country. If you've been out into the Holy Land, you'll know this is hilly land, a journey that is not fun on foot, with Mary's due date looming. This isn't convenient. It's not what anyone would have chosen. Believe me, if you ask any pregnant woman what is on her birthing plan when they hit that 9-month mark, I can guarantee you the answer will not be, oh, we're travelling 80 miles on foot through dangerous roads without even a place to stay lined up when we get there. That's not the plan, right? Of course not. The plan would be, well, hopefully all of our plans would be, home, family, midwife, safety, stability. And that's not what happens. Instead, they are directed by imperial decree, yes, but also by divine providence to the city of David, to Bethlehem, Joseph's ancestral hometown, a place his family line traces all the way back to King David himself. And here's what Luke needs you to see. The steps can feel inconvenient, unexpected, out of control even, but they are exact. Lineage, location, and timing all converge under God's hand. Joseph doesn't go to Bethlehem because he's clever. He doesn't even go necessarily because he remembered Micah 5:2 or thought, oh, I better get Mary down there just in case. He goes because Caesar told him to. He goes because he has to register. He goes because he doesn't have a choice. And yet at the same time, he goes because God has ordained his steps. God has positioned him through his family line, through obedience, through circumstances that Joseph doesn't create or control, to be exactly in the right place at the right time for the fulfillment of a promise made 700 years earlier. Let's be clear, providence doesn't always feel like a straight line, especially when we're living it. Often providence feels like a detour. Sometimes it feels even like an inconvenience. So often it feels like being off route. But only when you look back, when you see the whole picture, do we realise, oh, I was exactly where I needed to be all along. Think about your own life. How many times have you felt off course? How many times have you thought, this isn't the plan? This isn't where I'm supposed to be. This job, this city, this season, whatever it is, this doesn't make sense. And yet God is positioning you. He's placing you, not randomly, not accidentally, but with precision. Maybe the next job transfer you didn't want puts you next door to a neighbour who desperately needs to hear the gospel. Maybe that delayed flight seats you next to someone in crisis. Maybe that financial setback humbles you and teaches you to trust God's provision in a way that comfort never could. Maybe that illness put you in a hospital bed next to the exact person you're supposed to minister to. Maybe it's a closed door and felt like failure, but was actually protection from something you couldn't possibly see coming. We aim for a convenience, but God roots us to purpose. We want the established path, but God gives us the detour that sometimes even looks like failure, but was actually precision. So here's the application. Reflect on an area where you felt off route, perhaps even where you feel off route right now. Place that you've been thinking, this isn't where I'm supposed to be. This isn't what I signed up for. Name it. And then ask yourself this question. How might God be placing me precisely where I need to be? Not hypothetically or abstractly, practically, specifically. How can this inconvenience actually be the exact right place for this moment in your sanctification, in your service, or in your story? Keep a list this week. Call out your placed here on purpose list. And every day, write down one way you see that God may be positioning you. Maybe it's a conversation you wouldn't have if you were anywhere else. Maybe it's a lesson you've learned that you couldn't learn from comfort. Maybe it's just the slow daily realization that God hasn't forgotten you, even when the route doesn't make sense. And then take the opportunity to not miss those opportunities. Take the chance to step out in faith. Take the moment to have the conversation. Take the opportunity to live in gratitude, remembering that providence orders our steps to precisely the right place, even if it doesn't feel like it from our perspective. Verses 6 and 7. And while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling cloths and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them at the inn. Notice something else here. Going into labour is not something a woman has any control over. These days we have caesarean sections and sweeps that perhaps give us a little bit more choice in the matter. But ultimately, when the baby decides it's coming, it's coming, and there's not a thing you can do to stop it. The timing is outside of anyone's control, but not God's. The time came. Literally, if you read it in the Greek, it says, the days were fulfilled. And it's a phrase loaded with meaning. Not random or accidental, but in the fullness of time. A God's appointed moment. Exact place, Bethlehem, just like Micah said. Exact manner, a manger, a feeding trough for animals. Humility wrapped in swaddling cloths. The king arrives and almost no one notices. Caesar Augustus, he's in Rome, likely congratulating himself on a successful census and all those tax dollars that are coming in. Herod, the ruler of Israel, he's oblivious right now. Don't get me wrong, he'll learn soon enough. But at this point, he has no earthly idea what's going on down in Bethlehem. The religious leaders, likewise, they're in Jerusalem, going about their temple duties. The powerful, the connected, the insiders, they're all completely unaware. But in this tiny town, in this humble stable, in the most unimpressive circumstances imaginable, God keeps his word. And he keeps every word. Down to the city, down to the timing, down even to the manner of birth. This isn't vague spiritual fulfillment. It's not close enough. This is exact. If you count all of the prophecies Jesus' birth needed to fulfill, the odds are literally impossible that anyone would fulfill them by chance. But this isn't chance. This is God's sovereign decree. Bethlehem, not Nazareth, the manger, not a palace, the humility of the incarnation is part of the precision of the promise. And here's what it means for us. If God is this precise in fulfilling his promise to the world, then he's also this precise in fulfilling his promises to you. Listen, I know some of you are weary. I know some of you have been praying for something for a long time, been waiting for God to move, to answer, to provide. I know for some of you it feels like God is silent, like he's forgotten, like the promise has delayed too long, so much so that it may as well have been denied. But God isn't vague. He's not forgetful. He doesn't round off his promises to get close enough. When he says he'll do something, he does it. When he gives you his word, he keeps it. Not necessarily on our timeline, not necessarily in the ways that we expect, but precisely, exactly, in the fullness of time. We want comfort, and that's understandable. But sometimes there's not even any room at the inn. But all the while he's working, threading every inconvenience, ordering our steps, writing the story, keeping every word. So here's the application. And this one requires retraining how we think. When circumstances feel less than what we hope for, when we get the manger instead of the palace, when there's no room at the inn, when the answer to prayer looks humble or ordinary or smaller than we expected, let's learn to pause. Stop before we spiral into disappointment, and instead learn to ask ourselves this one simple question. What if God is being precise in a way I don't even recognise yet? Because here's what we do. We assume God's faithfulness looks like we expect it to. We assume it should be impressive. We assume answered prayer means obvious provision, immediate relief at the palace, the promotion, the miracle everyone can see. And yet sometimes we get the stable, and that is God's perfect fulfillment of his promise for us. When the provision's quiet, when the relief is slow, when the answer is wrapped in humility, let's retrain how we think. Instead of being tempted to think God didn't show up, or that he's forgotten us, or that maybe the promise doesn't apply to us, let's remember that God's provision doesn't always come in impressive packaging. The Messiah arrived exactly on time, exactly the right place, exactly the right manner to fulfill exactly the right prophecies. And that meant coming in a manger. No room at the inn. No palace, no fanfare. Just swaddling cloths and a feeding trough. And yet it was perfect. Precisely what the moment required, exactly what God had promised. So let's train ourselves this week and in our life to see his faithfulness in humble packaging. When the job offer comes through, but it's not the title or the salary we wanted, pause. What if God is being precise? When the medical news is stable but not healed, what if this is exactly where he's keeping you for reasons that you can't yet see? When the relationship improves but isn't as fast as you'd hoped, pause and ask, what if slow and steady is the exact route to health? Don't just dismiss the manger because it's not the palace. Don't overlook God's precision just because it's wrapped in ordinary circumstances. The King of Kings was born in a stable. It was exactly right. So this is how we live in the light of God's precise humility. We stop equating faithfulness with impressiveness. We stop assuming that if the answer doesn't look big, it's not from God. We retrain our eyes to see his care in the details, especially when those details look small. God fulfills promises with precision and humility. And that's the point. That's the point we see right here. So what do we do with this? How do we live in the light of truth? The rumors and rules and threads, even those that are inconvenient, are woven together to fulfill God's exact promise. Three things. First, we trust God's unseen authorship. When we read the headlines, when we face policy change at work, when we see political decisions that frustrate us, stop and pray. Pray over what feels arbitrary. Ask God to help you see his hidden thread. Don't just react to Caesar. Remember that God is writing the story. Second, we obey the next faithful step. Joseph, Mary, they didn't understand the whole plan. They didn't see why Bethlehem. They just knew they had to go. And so they went. Packed up their family, made the journey, and trusted God was ordering their steps, even though the route felt inconvenient. Sometimes we don't see the whole picture, and we don't need to. We just need to take that next faithful step, the next act of obedience, the next choice to trust instead of control, and have faith that God is putting us precisely where he wants us. Third, expect his promises to land precisely, not vaguely or approximately, but precisely, even when they don't look like we would hope them to do. The pilgrims didn't land in Virginia. Mary didn't give birth in a palace. But God's promise landed them exactly when and where and how they were supposed to. So here's my invitation this week. Trade grumbling over inconvenience for asking, how is God threading this? When the traffic's bad, when the meeting runs long, when the plans fall apart, pause and ask the question. Look for the thread. And then act on small obedience right in front of you. It could be as simple as a kind word, a patient response, the choice to trust instead of complain. But here's the truth. If God moved Caesar to move Mary and Joseph to Bethlehem, he can move you. He can position you. He can use the inconvenience you're facing today to put you exactly where you need to be tomorrow. Not just for your comfort, not just for your convenience, but for his glory and his good and yours. Providence is in the details. The doors are not accidents. The delays are not failures. God is writing. God is threading. God is keeping his word. And one day when you look back, you'll see it. The way the pilgrims saw Cape Cod, the way Mary saw the manger, the way we all see the cross. We look back with eyes unveiled and realise that God was there the whole time. And here's the truth, some of us won't see the full picture this side of eternity even. But we live with faith and trust. God truly does work all things together for the good of those who believe and those who are called according to his purposes. The route we choose isn't the route. The route we need isn't always the route we choose. The place you didn't want is sometimes the place he's prepared. The king you expected to arrive in a palace arrived in a stable. It was exactly right. Perfect. Precisely on time. And if it's true then, it remains true today. So let's pray.